Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
Episode 240, recorded February 16th, 2015.
This is a special interview with Mick in Carnforth, UK.
The one and only.
Welcome, Mick.
Hi, Russ. Hi, Kelly. Yes, this is Mick here in the one and only Carnforth.
I love that.
And just only a few miles down the road from the home of lovely mint cake as well.
Yeah. See, that would be a lovely place to visit.
The mint cake that is very well appreciated and esteemed in our household, I must say. Thanks to you, Mick. Well, today's episode is going to be on tank busters. So we'll start out just kind of with a bit of an explanation for those of you who might not know. It is a common term, but
they don't suck your fish up into an ectoplasmic holding tank.
Like Ghostbusters?
Like Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay. No. So Mick, why don't you tell us what your working definition of what a tank buster is?
Okay, I think a tank buster fish is one of those very pretty little fish that you see in many shops, and sometimes already jumping on the soapbox, too many shops, but a very pretty fish, looks very nice, but it's really a fish that will either grow very quickly or will grow to an eventual size, which is generally much, much larger and needs much more demand than the usual household tank can cope with. So typically, the kind of customers that I get, people's got a tank between about 60 and 100 litres, so quite what that works out in US gallons, I'm not entirely sure, but a smaller to medium-sized household tank. And you'll get fish which you may pick up a couple of inches or so, but fish that are generally going to top out at, 12, 18 inches, 24 inches plus. So it's something that you can pick up small, generally grows quite fast, and either needs very special care, very special foods, and or a very special tank, and usually a much larger tank than people really realize they're going to work for them.
Right, so 25 litres must be maybe around 25, 30 gallons, U.S. gallons, somewhere in there, I think. And that would mean, some of those fish would have a hard time turning around in a tank that big.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So tank busters, essentially fish that start out looking really nice and small, but they're going to surprise the owners if they're not completely ready to deal with their adult size and their growth rates.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, one thing, when do you think, what does someone need to be ready for if they're going to keep a tank buster? What do they need to consider before they do it? What do they need to prepare before they do it?
I mean, it's like a lot of things with this kind of hobby and lots of other hobbies. If you are wanting to keep something that's something different, something a bit more specialist, you really need to do lots and lots of research. And you can never read too many things. You type in, common pleco, into Google, you'll get pages and pages and pages of stuff. So you can look through different care sheets. You can see things on YouTube. You can see what people are doing. There's lots of really good forums. I mean, we touched briefly before about like the Monster Fish Forum. Over here, we've got a really good the Catfish Study Group. Here in the UK, I've got tons and tons of information on their stuff for anything from Corydoras right up to the really big catfish. So you can get some really good information and get the setup right from the start. If you want to keep these fish, that's great. I think very few people are really truly geared up for it, but you need to look, do they need specialist food? Do they need specialist water? Do they need specialist filtration? And it's usually yes, yes, yes on all those kind of points. And if you're a person that's got the space and the funds and the dedication to do that, then great. But it really is a case of, research to the nth degree. And if you can find someone that's keeping those fish and go and visit them, just like anything else, that's really going to be a fantastic thing to do. See how someone else is doing it. See how well those fish are. See how good the tanks look.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. The research is vital. You have to do that first. But then if you're able to actually see those fish in a real-life situation in someone's home, and then you have a much better idea of whether you're up for it or not.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm sure that many good public aquariums would, at least give a couple of paragraph kind of answer if you're looking at something that's really big You know, that you might be able to email someone of the curators or the keepers at one of your local public aquariums and just kind of say, you know, what have you guys got some experience with this? Or you know, pay the ticket, go around, maybe see some of them and talk to the folks that work there. You know, I know one or two people that work in public aquariums and they're just as happy to talk to you about something you can do at home based on the kind of things they're doing there. It might really sway you towards doing it, or it might make you really rethink and do something that's more suitable for your space and time.
Right, and I think that's a good thing to think about when if you're not dissuaded once you really know what's there and you really do think you have the funds and the space and the inclination, then you're good to go. But if it's making you really consider it, then you probably ought to hold off.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, start with that kind of 20, 30-gallon tank first and get some experience in keeping fish, even if it's just neon tetras and guppies. You know, get some experience on what it really takes to look after a fish tank. When you've done that for a few years and you've experimented with a few different fish, if that's the direction you want to go in, then you've already got a good head start. I wouldn't recommend that somebody just takes on, like, you know, like big pike cichlids or snakeheads or bikefish or anything like that as their first fish on tank. That's a really big kind of ask.
Yeah, they might even burn out really fast and kind of prematurely damage their chances in the hobby just because they took on too big a project too soon.
Oh, definitely. I mean, some people struggle with just the little kind of, the small kind of, you know, living room, small community tank with 20 or so fish in, and people very easily get disappointed, you know, when you start losing a few, you know, a handful of tetras or guppies. So doing something that needs really a lot of specialist kind of care and attention. You don't want to waste a lot of money, and you don't want to injure a fish, and you really don't want something that's going to be a disappointment. So yeah, if you're geared up for doing it, then that's brilliant.
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, let's talk about some of the most common tank busters you see in your area. I know that a lot of our listeners probably know that you run a shop where fish are one of your specialties, fangs and fins, and so you probably deal with people who are looking for them, and you are aware of other shops in the area and what's available and what people are asking for and what are on the stock list. So if you could tell us some of the most common tank busters in your area.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I can get, you know, I get trade lists from various companies all the time, kind of on a weekly basis, and you get a lot of stuff like, you know, you might get things like, you know, any end of different tetras and the colour forms of guppies and all the rest of it. But once you start looking down some of the lists, and it's usually companies that sell a lot of what we kind of term the bread and butter fish, so the kind of typical small community fish that people buy, you'll always see on those lists the, you know, big American cichlid fish. You'll also quite often see the red-tailed catfish. That's a very common one here. Piranhas are another one, and you know, you can get either imported or UK captive bred piranhas. And I won't say I get asked weekly about that, but you certainly get asked. I certainly get asked periodically about people setting up for, and it's red bellies. It's usually red bellies that we get over here. Giant gouramis occasionally pop up, and people kind of think about that. Tiger and shovel nose catfish are regularly available on lists. So it's kind of, you know, lots of fish, and again, these are all fish that are going to come in quite small, but are going to grow very, very quickly. So we when we started the shop, and it was something I was doing at the place I used to kind of manage and work, we immediately signed up to in the UK, we've got the Big Fish Campaign, which is bigfishcampaign.org. And the flagship kind of mascot for that fish is a red-tailed catfish. So, you know, there's lots of information out there. And we decided quite early on that we were going to specialise in small, easygoing, interesting community fish. But there's lots there, and I think, you know, and retailers kind of, you know, if you're happy to get it, people will, you know, trade wholesalers will send it through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and I think it's great that you've decided to make sure your shop stocks things that people can handle a lot more easily. And it seems like these days too, even when the shops are good about stocking fish that are easier for people with smaller tanks to handle, then people will sometimes go online and find the tank busters, it seems like. Have you encountered that as well?
Sometimes. I mean, mail order over here, you definitely will get people doing mail order dry goods, accessories, and that kind of thing. But mail order fish is not a great big thing over here. There's lots of, online classifieds and exchange sites and Facebook sites where people will kind of sell and exchange and swap fish and that kind of thing. But if people come to me and want something particular and it's something that I wouldn't usually stock or recommend, I'll talk to them and buy things in by request. But if it's really big specialist stuff, it is very hard for someone here in the UK just to go online and just pay the money and get something sent through the post.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't realized that. I guess it's much bigger over here, and it might have something to do with the distances. There's just a little bit more. If someone wants to get something from one coast to another here, that post is really the only way, or mail is really the only way to do it, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe that's,
the Bailey Brothers and AquariumFish.net, they've got a business, a very successful business, and they send stuff out all over the place, don't they? But there's nothing that's anything like that over here in the UK. It's little bits, few and far between, and most people really want to go somewhere and see something and buy something that they're already looking at.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Okay. Well, another one I know that you had mentioned before, some of these are things that you find a lot of stores will also stock a common Pleco, or maybe you already mentioned that one.
Common Plecos, yeah, I mean, they are a very common one. I get lists with them on routinely. And again, I remember when I originally took over managing the place before we had the shop, the previous aquarium, we must have taken in before I was there nearly a dozen common plecos that were all, getting up to about a foot long. And, we were struggling to deal with them, and with kind of separate quarantine tanks and kind of holding tanks and all that kind of thing. And they'd been there for ages. And then one by one, I managed to find people that I knew that had big systems that would kind of take them. But again, people usually say, oh, have you got any, come into my shop, and they'll say, I'm looking for those sucker, is it like a pleco fish? And I'll say, well, what about an ancestrous catfish? It's going to get to about 3 or 4 inches tops. It's going to be much more interesting. It's going to clean up a lot of algae, and it's not going to wrap around the tank twice in 3 years' time.
yeah, that's a much more sensible choice. And that's what I always recommend when people ask me, too. The ancestrous are amazing and much easier. And I love how you missed it. Kelly had to step out for a moment, but is back now. He mentioned how a common pleco will wrap around the tank twice. In 3 years' time, and that's really not much of an exaggeration. I've walked into plenty of homes that have a 10-gallon tank that has a common pleco that can barely fit in it. It's jammed itself up against one wall, and all the way its tail reaches the other side.
And there's some very beautiful fish amongst them. The Lower County Group, there are hundreds and hundreds of fish, and some of them are absolutely stunning. But, I had someone came in at the weekend, and I'd spoke to them a few months ago, and they were looking, they'd kind of bought a bigger tank because they'd ended up with this thing, and they felt that they wanted to keep it rather than try and pass the problem to somebody else. And they were talking about a hive, and I said, well, just try and find yourself like a decent-sized terracotta pot and just use a grinder and kind of cut an edge off it kind of thing. And they were in the other day, and they were saying, oh, do you remember we talked about this pleco we've got? It's got like 6 inches bigger now. And we've not been able to find a plant pot big enough for this thing to fit in. we've a lot of garden centres with some big terracotta pots around here, but they couldn't find anything that they could find that would fit in the tank and that the pleco could then go and hide in. So that kind of sums it up for me, really.
Yeah, that's very illustrative.
You can find a plant pot that will fit a tree, but not that will fit a common pleco fish.
Yeah, exactly. Why do you think people fall into the trap of buying a tank buster? What are the traps that people fall into?
I think a lot of it is kind of either impulse buys. People see something, it looks really attractive. With something like an Oscar catfish, you see those things at kind of 2 inches, and they are stunning little fish. They have cheeky little faces. They have quite interesting colours a lot of the time. It looks like a little bright fish that's smiling as it kind of swims around the tank. and people think, oh yeah, that would look really, really nice in my kind of, you know, 60-70-100 litre tank, and it will for a few months. So people kind of see it and think, that's great, and I'll buy it, and, you know, that's one of the things. And again, if you're working in a shop that's got those kind of fish and someone says, I want one, for me, the onus is then on the storekeeper to say, okay, you want that fish. And people say to me, oh, can I have some guppies? And I'll say, oh, what kind of fish do you keep? You know, I'll get into a conversation about their tank before I'll kind of sell them a fish. Friendly. You know, what are the things you can... Sometimes people ask something that's unsuitable. I'll say, I don't think that's going to work for you, but here, what about thinking about this or that or something else? This is going to actually do really, really well. So there's impulse buy with no information, and sometimes it's... And again, sometimes people kind of think, you know, oh, yeah, well, you know, they don't get as big as people say, and the old thing that constantly crops up, and I think you mentioned it on my last correspondence with the last show, they grow to the size of the tank, don't they? I mean, I get that almost daily.
That's unfortunately a myth that is dying hard.
Yeah. I mean, I did say to one the other day, if you bought a pair of shoes when you were five, they wouldn't still fit you now because your feet would grow. You know, your feet don't grow to the size of the shoe and the fish doesn't grow to the size of the tank.
good way to point it out. I like that. Good comparison.
But, I mean, there's loads of ways these days. I mean, if you go to a shop that's got good labelling, and hopefully most shops will have not just a price but at least some kind of info sticker on there. I mean, so many people now have smartphones. You can be connected up to the internet wherever you are. You can look at a sign. You can look at a fish. You can drop it in Google, bring it up on your phone before you even speak to someone in the shop and get some ideas about what that fish is and what's involved in keeping it.
Yeah, that's a great point. A good way to maximize the benefit of technology when you're trying to scope out some fish. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of easy to put all the blame on retailers, and retailers should play a strong part in information, but there is an amount of, you know, kind of, your responsibility on anybody that's going to buy any animal, and, you know, whether it's a neon tetra or whether it's a, you know, an arowana or whether it's a dog, to kind of just do that little bit of research beforehand. It's so easy to do now. There's so much information there out there that you can do it in seconds.
Yeah, it's so much easier to access than it was 15, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, that there's really no excuse for not doing it anymore.
Absolutely.
And another reason that I've noticed, I fell into this trap when I was probably 12 or 13. I saw a lovely little red tiger Oscar in the shop and said, that's a beautiful fish.
Yeah.
Sure. I'd like to get that, and I will upgrade the tank later. And it ended up not working out very well. I honestly don't remember too well if I traded that fish out for something else at the pet store or if I gave it to a friend with a larger tank or something, but pretty soon that Oscar had outgrown the tank I had it in, and I deluded myself into thinking that I would be able to upgrade the tank later, and I wasn't in a position to do so when I needed to. So I think that's a big trap too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people's circumstances can change, you know, depending on work and housing and all that kind of thing. And life comes up and catches people out from time to time. But yeah, to think, I'll get the bigger thing when it needs it. Not always that straightforward.
Right. Any other reasons that you've noticed? I think you've hit upon the biggest ones already. But any other things that you've seen? Reasons why people buy Tank Busters?
No, I think that kind of covers it. It's really, I think it is that kind of occasional impulse or not the right information, or sometimes you'll get, you know, you'll always get unscrupulous shops which will give you the wrong information. You know, somebody might ask a question, oh, how big does this get, or what does this need? And say, oh, it's fine, yeah, just put it in with the others, it'll be no problem. There was a thing that came up last week from a shop not too far from us that was selling red-tailed catfish. And someone had been told, oh, well, in your tank, it'll only get to be about a foot and a half. I don't know how big this tank was. So they bought it, took it home, and overnight, most of the fish had disappeared. So they were kind of complaining through one of these kind of Facebook posting type things about this, and the shop got into trouble over it and all this kind of thing. But, the thing that people need to think, even if you're in a position where you know what you're doing and you can take this on, if things go wrong or if circumstances change, can you get rid of that fish responsibly? Can you pass that on somewhere?
Right. You should have a backup plan, even if you do have everything you need. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend that was keeping Oscar, doing it really, really well. She took it really seriously, but her circumstances changed. The tank that she had developed a problem, and she wasn't able to get a replacement tank properly. And in the end, she kind of had, I helped out with some emergency stuff to keep these fish going, but she found someone that would take them, and she kind of vetted them very carefully as well. But, you know, a position change, she, you know, kind of suddenly, and it's like, if that happens, what are you going to do with these? What are you going to do with these fish?
Right, and one thing I think that comes up there is a lot of people suddenly, or they, as soon as anything comes up, they do find they have they need to find a new home for their fish for whatever reason. They often think of a public aquarium first, but that often ends up not being a very viable option.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's been, I know over here all our aquariums and the zoos are all tied into the one kind of Biaza Foundation, and they've got to have, even I with the shop, have to have some kind of paper trail of where things have come from and quarantining and all the rest of it. And, you know, it's not that easy just to take something in. A lot of times public aquariums will have, you know, a program of exhibitions and displays and projects, and although they've got a lot of tanks and a lot of water, they haven't got the space or the means to just take these things in.
Right. Those are two very good points. One of them is they do need that, the paper trail and legalities and protocols.
Mm.
And then the other is, the mission or the goals of the aquarium may not be met by these other fish. And another one, too, is that if a fish already has a red-tailed catfish, what I mean is if the aquarium already has a red-tailed catfish and it's already obtained it through the proper channels, it has very little reason to try to house another one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we get it a little bit in the summertime where I don't sell pond fish at the moment. The place I used to work at had a big, you know, they were kind of aquatics garden centre, so we did a lot of tropical stuff indoors, and in the season we had all the pond stuff outside, and we would get in one or two sturgeon, but I regularly see all sorts of sturgeon for sale for people, and, you know, if you've got a pond, they'll put you a sturgeon in there. Well, you know, again, it's not a fish that you need a tank for, but that's a fish that needs, you know, deep, cold water, it needs a lot of room to move, it needs, you know, a sinking food. So, you know, even things like that people would buy for a pond, kind of, some of those things can be a serious fish in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you need basically a small lake to take care of a sturgeon properly, don't you?
You do, really, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, we have a few people, because we're in quite a rural part of North Lancashire and South Cumbria, so, you know, you get people with, like, little wildlife ponds I've got at the back, which are smaller than some people's fish tanks, but, you know, you get people with, you know, an acre or so of a good deep pond, and that's great, and you can put those things in there. You'll never see them, but you can put them in there.
Right. Okay, well, I think then if we've kind of covered some of those things about other things. Oh, go ahead.
This is just me coming up with a question now, so
okay.
It's kind of on the fly. But if someone had one of these big tank-busting fish and for whatever reason couldn't take care of anymore, are there resources out there for them to try to find somebody? I mean, like, different dog breeds have rescue sites and whatnot. Are there fish rescue sites or anything like that to help people hook up with somebody to take these fish?
I don't know what you folks would have out there. Over here, there's almost nothing. I mean, to be perfectly honest, animal rescue is very difficult here, general animal rescue, and fish is something else over here. I can't think of anywhere that takes in fish. It's either a public aquarium or, you know, another aquarium shop that will kind of, you know, that has some space that will take it and try and move it on. But I can't think of anywhere that's really geared up for taking in fish here.
Okay. So I don't know of anything either. That's why I was wondering.
Yeah, I've heard...
You do get these kind of, you know, online exchange sites. Facebook has any amount of those kind of things, and local online classified kind of things and all that. So there's options to explore, but there's not any kind of registered facilities I'm aware of that either specialise in fish or that really take a lot of fish on.
Okay.
Right. And I think it's doubly difficult when you are getting into the tank busters, just because
if
you put on, say, a pair of angelfish that will fit into a normal home aquarium and you put those on a classified list and say, I need a new home for my goldfish, I have to move overseas, and you put that up there, I don't think you're going to have trouble housing your angelfish. But if you do that with, say, an arowana or something like that, it might be a bit more difficult to find someone
mm-hmm.
who
oh,
could do it.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I know that there are fish.
We get it as well with the reptile side. I mean, it's changing tech slightly, but it's linked to, we get, routinely, I get asked week in, week out about, you know, different types of turtles and bearded dragons. Will I take them in? My shop could turn into a rescue centre in less than a week. If I allowed it to.
Yeah, I see that in our local classified. We have a local pet classified site for the state and neighboring states, and there are lots of turtles, lots of bearded dragons, lots of snakes, things like that that show up.
Yeah.
And you do get some people who say, I will take in any unwanted reptiles, who just post up there. But I see that less with the fish classifieds. Interestingly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, very occasionally you get people kind of open to offers, but it's a difficult thing. I think you will, most other kind of family pets, would it be it, you know, a mammal of any description or a reptile, you can usually find a home for, usually, not always. But fish, it is very, very difficult. And if
right.
you do that in a hurry, then it's even more difficult.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And I know our local... We have one local shop that will take in fish if they have need for them, if they have the market for them. But a lot of times, things like you were saying in your shop, you eventually found homes for those common plecos, but it wasn't easy. And usually the shops have enough of those that they're already trying to unload that it's a bit of a burden for them.
People will ask me about things and I'll say, well, you know, why do you want rid of it? And then they'll say, well, it's got too big or whatever. And I'll say, well, you know, what do you think I'm going to do with it, kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know,
oh, just put it in your bathtub, right?
Yeah, and some of these fish would outgrow your bathtub really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, quite, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, should we move on to the goldfish then?
Okay, yeah, because goldfish are a good one. I mean, I get this quite a lot, and I kind of sent you a little bit of blurb last time about goldfish as well. But yeah, I think goldfish kind of cross is a good crossover, because you know, I can give you a short story of something that happened to me last year. Again, another shop not too far from us, who's supposedly an aquatic specialist, had sold a lady a tank which held certainly no more than 30 litres. And they'd sold her to go in that tank, one very small fancieranda, and two golden orf. So needless to say, it wasn't going very well for her after a couple of weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So she came to me and told me about these fish. The water was going green, and these two bigger fish were harassing the other fish. Its tail was getting nipped. And I said, kind of said, well, do you know what they are? Oh, no, well, this shop told me that they'd be all right together. And, well, bring me a picture in. And when she brought me a picture, and I'm like, oh, crikey. So I kind of said to her, look, you know, your tanks are designed for things like white clouds, Daniels, blah, blah, blah. If you bring me those fish, I will put them in a big tank upstairs, and I'll try and get the orf into a pond, and I'll see if I can find another home for the fancy goldfish, or put it in my stock or something. So she brought those fish in, and I managed to, after a few weeks, we kind of found places for them to go. It's not something I've... If you live in Kendal, I didn't just say that. But it was just one of those things where I thought, no, this is someone that's tried really hard to get this right, to get a tank. She wanted a small tank. She asked all the right questions at another shop and was given ridiculous information. And, you know, she was at the point of just kind of, you know, pouring these things down the bathroom and getting rid of her and putting the tank in the bin. And I was like, oh, hang on, no. And you know, she's come back to me several times since, and, you know, buys an odd plant and things, and, oh, she's really pleased with this little tank now. So,
well,
yeah,
good.
The goldfish thing is kind of another thing that I've really struggled with. And we do still get, I don't know if you folks get it over there, but we do get about two or three times a year the fair rolls into town, and I get a parade of goldfish in tiny little bags brought into the shop.
Yeah. We haven't been to the fair in a long time, so I don't know if they still do the games with the goldfish or not.
The last time we were there, though, they did do it, yes. And they would sell them the tiny little bowls that probably held, 2 pints of water or something.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was awful.
It was kind of like a bargain home store place in town, and whenever the fair's due to roll up, they always have these cheap little kind of 10, 15-litre tanks with a little sponge air pump. Something like, I think, about £10 UK money, something like that. So it's very, very cheap. So all these people then kind of go off and buy these tiny little 10-litre tanks, and they've got two or three for kids, and they've all won a goldfish, and two or three goldfish going 10 litres of water. And
it's,
and they're always common goldfish as well, which are, you know, not even, you know, a fancy goldfish in there is bad enough, but the common goldfish, again, it's really either a very long aquarium or, you know, a very large, decent aquarium inside, or it's a pond.
Right.
The common goldfish, they grow, they seem to grow faster a lot of the time and get bigger than most of the fancies.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we see it routinely. You get the common kind of yellow or a typical goldfish, shabunkins, that kind of thing, and all these things which are about an inch and a half long. And I know that wholesale-wise, in the summertime, when they're available, you know, you can buy them wholesale for a few pence here. You know, so as a prize, it costs them nothing, you know. It's probably cheaper to give away a goldfish than a bag of peanuts or a bag of sweets or something.
Right.
Yeah. And I've noticed, too, that in those small desktop aquariums that are quite small, like the ones you were talking about, they're often marketed with pictures of goldfish in them, and not just one, but they'll have two, three, four, five goldfish in the tank as a sort of a...
They usually come with little pictures of goldfish on, and if not that, they'll come with a little packet of goldfish food in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
So that everything about them is encouraging people to buy a goldfish and stick it in a tiny amount of water.
Right, that seems to be one of the biggest problems, and even they'll have on the side the recommended fish for this tank. They'll say things like guppy, betta, goldfish.
Yeah, definitely.
Letting everyone up for failure, really, and so they have to go back and buy more, set up the whole vicious cycle again, where they, my goldfish did fine. They lasted 3 months. I want some more now.
You know, people kind of look at these things sometimes, like cut flowers. You know, they buy them on the understanding that they're only going to live for a few weeks or so, and then they'll just buy another one because it's cheap. And just
right. And many people seem to be, they have this sort of conception that is the goldfish lifespan. And when I tell people, oh, yes, I've had goldfish for more than 15 years, they say, what? How is that possible? And I said, it's not... not unusual if the goldfish is healthy.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've had people coming in saying, this one lasted 3 months, didn't I do well? And it's just like, not really, no. People, we get this all the time. There's another, I've kind of got two fairly local places, if you like, in competition to me, but I don't get too excited about that kind of thing. But one of the ones, which is just on the outskirts of town, is a big national chain. You guys would call it a box store, big box store. Again, they sell these tiny little aquariums and tell people to put goldfish in there. You know, so when they come to me and they go, oh, well, such and such a place told me that I could, and it's just like, oh, no, you know.
Don't listen to them.
Boxer, obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about because I'm just some little private shop in the arcade, you know.
My gosh. That's so frustrating.
I can almost guarantee the story that people come in with, and I get this at least once a week, but they've bought a or more fancy goldfish at about an inch or two long. They'll put them in these tiny tanks, and they'll be sold some really cheap, nasty kind of flake food. So they'll start feeding the flake food. The water will go green. Then the goldfish will turn upside down. And then everything starts, just kind of gets worse from there, really, in the space of, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And I get that story week in, week out.
That's so sad.
Yeah. So maybe what we should do is for those who, you know, may be thinking about getting goldfish and haven't really done that, because I know a lot of people say goldfish are beginner's fish, and I say, not really.
No.
Not really. But
you know, I felt as though I had to make amends to goldfish last year. I decided that I'd not kept goldfish since I was a really little kid. And, you know, to my great shame, you know, 30-odd years ago, I got little goldfish and put them in a bowl, and every week I would empty all the water out and bleach the thing or use washing up liquid in there, you know, helped by my mum, and then drop the fish back in and fill it up from the tank. And it was, you know, it was just kind of piscine torture, really. But everybody was doing it, so it was normal. You know, it's just what people decided. That's how you kept gold. That's what you did to them. Nobody really knew, you know, then. But so I decided, no, I'm going to do goldfish, and I'm going to do it properly. I'm going to buy a decent tank. I'm going to get a big filter. I'm going to get the proper, really high-quality food. I'm going to do big water changes. And it has been absolutely fantastic. You know, I kind of had that tank running for about kind of 10 months, something like that, and we've just decided to have a change. So I'm now doing a kind of Asian-themed tropical tank with that tank. But those fish grew. They were brightly coloured. None of them turned upside down. The water was never green. You know, mm-hmm. Those were fantastic fish. I've taken them to the shop, and the people that haven't said, oh, they won't fit in my little coffee cup tank, have, you know, they've bought them. I had a lady that bought a kind of, you know, a 70-litre tank to put one in. Just the one fish, because she thought it was stunning. It was a little, it was a telescope which kind of had the red cap mark on its head, and it was my favourite. So I think Bernard, she's called it. So Bernard has had a whole tank set up just for him, and she's really taken it seriously, and he's doing terrifically well now.
Awesome.
That's lovely.
So I felt like I'd made my amends to all those goldfish that I kind of tortured to an early demise.
There you go.
Yep.
But this is a tank that's about kind of getting on towards 200 litres. I had 5 goldfish in there. And, you know, I knew if I was going to keep them for longer than that, I would have started to thin them out.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Goldfish Society of Great Britain, they recommend an absolute minimum of 50 litres for any one fancy goldfish. But that's kind of like the absolute minimum that you can possibly even consider. So we can't. And again, I decided to write an entire goldfish keep a sheet out for people, because they'll come to me, we want an aquarium, we're just thinking we'll get some goldfish. Okay, well here's a sheet all about kind of starting up an aquarium and what you need to do, and here's another sheet that will explain what you need to do if you really want to do goldfish.
It's a good idea.
They don't end up.
I just kind of got fed up with bashing my head on the counter.
and so what did you say the absolute minimum recommended was?
The Goldfish Society of Great Britain, they recommend an absolute minimum of 50 litres for a single fancy goldfish. And I think that goes up to about 70 plus for what you would class as like a comic type, a standard kind of comic type goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's about 13 US gallons then. And yeah, that's pretty close to what I've heard from some of the goldfish societies over here. One of the ones that I have consulted and would say that they're pretty good. They say a minimum of 20 gallons for the tank to even house one goldfish in it. But then if you can put another goldfish in there if for each 10 gallons you add to it. So and 20 gallons is about 5 liters. So that's pretty comparable. It sounds like they're about on the same page then.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. And again, there's all the different types of goldfish. And I think Petfish Talk did either a section or a show about things like the bubble eyes, telescopes, different fancies. And you know, people will often say, oh, well, I've got like an Aranda and I want to put a comet with it and that kind of thing. Or I've got a celestial bubble eye and I want to put so-and-so with it. And again, it's just like, you've not only got to think about the needs of a goldfish, but there's different types, you know, lots of different types of goldfish that all need to be kept that little bit differently, that'll feed differently, that'll kind of need a little bit more care. And if you're going to keep, you know, things like bubble eyes, celestials, you need to think about, you know, whether you're going to put any decor in there. You don't want things that are going to catch those ice hacks.
Right. And then the amount of, what can I say, the feeding response or the feeding aggression maybe that different varieties have, where you have any single-tailed goldfish can swim circles around, of course, something like a telescope or a bubble eye or even an oranda.
Oh, yeah.
And will often out-compete them so much for food that they end up not doing well or even starve to death.
Yeah, they'll out-compete for food. They'll barge them out of the way, and you can have injured fish just from the, you know, they're just a naturally boisterous nature of a typical kind of, you know, common or comic type goldfish.
Right. And goldfish, I know a lot of people call them dirty, and I don't know if that's exactly the right way to refer to them, but just because they do, they're massive in, you know, in terms of, there's a lot of fish per inch of length there, and
yeah. They
need a lot of water changes. Like I do about a 50% water change weekly is my typical
regimen. Yeah, I'm doing about kind of 30 to 40% about every kind of 4 or 5 days. That kind of fitted in with my routine. And I had a big oversized filter, but again, it was a filter that was oversized, but I didn't want a filter that was going to create a terrific jet of current. I wanted a decent flow and turnover, but I didn't want it to turn into, you know, into a mountain stream, so the poor little fancy goldfish were all shot blasted down the other end of the tank either. So you've kind
right.
of got to think about, if you're going to put some kind of filtration on there, you need to make sure it's a good filter that will biologically do what you want it to do. And, you know, but we'll give, you know, enough water movement without kind of creating a really strong current that's going to affect the goldfish as well.
Right, and that can be hard to do. And that's with our goldfish tank I ended up putting 2 fairly large filters on, so we got a good flow rate and lots of biological filtration. But like you say, we don't want to turn into a river or a mountain stream. So
yeah,
you have to come up with,
you know. That's
have to kind of adapt things, make sure it's
a bunch of other problems, constantly fighting against the current kind of thing.
Right, so it doesn't stress them out.
And I think, you know, the food is another good one as well. I mean, people will always, you know, people will say, oh, I want to put such and such in with such and such, mixing, can you mix tropicals and goldfish and this, that and the other? And, you know, if you're going to keep goldfish and buy a really good quality goldfish food. You know, I get this stuff imported from Holland that I use, and it's absolutely terrific.
I've noticed that is a big factor, too. If I use anything less than a premium quality food, I find the goldfish suffering in one way or another. Sometimes, especially with the fancy ones, they'll start getting bloated and things on less than ideal food.
Yeah, I mean,
and
again, goldfish insides are kind of wired up a little bit differently to most of the fish as well. You know, they've got that extra long length of intestine and all that kind of thing. And I kind of say to people, it's like having a tiny little swimming cow. It's kind of always on the lookout and grazing, and it's kind of, you know, it needs plenty of roughage to clear that digestive tract through, and you know, it still needs a good quality food.
Right, and the roughage too. I like to keep. Make sure my fish get fresh greens too. It really seems to make a difference for the goldfish if they get
I mean, in fairness, people that do keep goldfish fairly well are great for me, because they'll come in and buy, you know, kabomba and cardamine and things like that, just because it's fresh salad for them. And they'll come in every week or so, and, you know, they'll say, oh, I'm going to buy a couple of these. They've always eaten them in no time, but I say, well, that's a good thing. You know, that's actually really good.
Right. But that's what they do in ponds, and that's what keeps them healthy and doing well in the ponds.
Yeah, and I always had a couple of days in the week where I would use this kind of multi-mix premium goldfish pellet, and then I would use like an algae wafer type pellet, but not a hard disc wafer, almost like a round kind of crisp, so like a crossover between a flake and a pellet. But I'd use that as a kind of roughage thing. And when they were bigger, of course, you can always use a little bit of kind of spinach and some stuff like that, or you know, half a shelled pea or something like that's quite good.
Yes, my goldfish love that. That's one of their favorite things. Half a shelled pea or
some canned green beans.
Oh, they love, yes, put open a canned green bean and put that in. They love that too.
Yeah. It's surprising that things will go for that. And again, I think most of the time when I get this kind of story of small tank, fancy goldfish, really rubbish food, and then it turns on its side or upside down. So they'll go back to the big box store, and the big box store say, "Here, buy this bottle of swine bladder treatment. That's what's wrong with it." Well, it's probably worth his money, you know. So, and so they buy the swine bladder treatment, and the thing still dies, you know. It just costs them even more money to kill it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
So I had a guy that came in, and his goldfish was not doing well. His tank was really green, so we talked about his tank. It was a little bit smaller, but it was okay for now. He changed his food. He started doing more water changes and all that kind of thing. Within a week, his water quality was absolutely spot on. His fish was the right way around. It was swimming. It was bright. It was active. He was thrilled to pieces, you know, because he kind of been somewhere, got all this really, really, really bad advice, and he was feeling really disappointed. He felt it was his fault. He'd obviously done something wrong. But no, you've just been given the wrong advice and you've been sold the wrong equipment. Just make a couple of cheap and easy changes. And, you know, really, you know, there's nothing much cheaper than just changing an extra couple of buckets of water on something.
Right. And a lot of times that will cover a multitude of issues.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So let's see. And one thing about goldfish, too, that I wanted to cover. I know that there are many places where people will think, okay, well, this goldfish has gotten too big, or I don't want to take care of it, or I can't take care of it anymore. And so they find a waterway of some kind, a local lake or whatever, and release the goldfish there.
Yeah, that does happen. That definitely does happen. We have quite a few watercourses where we are. I mean, we're the edge on what's known as the British Lake District, so we've no shortage of water or rain. Canals are plenty and that kind of thing. And we've got a problem with things like goldfish being released, and either they'll survive and kind of become a nuisance, or they'll die very quickly because they're just not really, they're not geared up. They've not been brought up to survive in the canal, in the wild, with lots of other predators and other kind of pathogens and things. And the other thing we have a problem with is people doing that with the turtles, and we talked about turtles before. There's a huge problem with, especially red ears. Red ears have been a big thing for us. And in the last 10 or 15 years, we've got a lot of red ears in canals that's kind of becoming a real nuisance. You know, we have an amount of animal control over here with, you know, laws and licensing, but there's not a lot of funds behind it. But, you can be, if you are found, you can be prosecuted and face penalties over here.
Right. And, yeah, it's in our state, at least, it's illegal to release goldfish or anything, any sort of aquatic life into a waterway, a naturally occurring waterway, whether it's private property or not.
My understanding
of how the law works, and just to prevent that sort of thing from happening, but I don't think it's enforced very tightly. I think people get away with it a lot.
Oh, it happens a lot. I mean, the rescue centre that we've worked with for a few years now, they would take in turtles, and then somebody from the UK, I think it was Tortoise and Turtle Trust, would collect them whenever they had 50 or more. And I know the last time that they had them all collected, they in the course of the year, they had nearly 400 turtles brought into them.
Wow.
And that's the ones that people are being responsible with and taking to one rescue centre here in the north of England. We know there's lots more that end up in the canal. I had a phone call from someone who was saying, someone they knew were just going to put them on the beach and let them go, and I'm just kind of like, ooh, wow, okay.
No!
There's a lot of issues around that there. Let's just try and do something about that. But yeah, it's a huge problem, and we kind of took that stand with when the latest kind of Ninja Turtle film came out as well. We kind of had to do a little bit. We tried to do a little bit of promotion with that in the shop about responsible keeping and that kind of thing.
That's good.
Right, because you know that just like what happened with Finding Nemo, when the turtle movie came out, you get a surge of interest in young children with.
Mm-hmm.
In keeping turtles, but not necessarily a surge in their ability to do so or the information that they have. So it's good that you are being active in kind of promoting that information so that they know whether or not they're ready for it.
Oh, yeah, and I think you know, again, it's kind of there's a responsibility on people, but there's a kind of responsibility to the kind of pet industry as a whole. I don't know about over there, but here, the kind of pet industry does have, and I think quite rightly, a bad reputation. You know, whether it's fish, whether it's reptiles, whether it's anything else, it has a really bad reputation for dingy little shops up back streets that were just kind of selling things to anybody, and nobody really cares about what happens. And, you know, the industry as a whole has to kind of improve its image and improve its responsibilities. And mm-hmm. you know,
right. And I've certainly seen great strides in the past, I don't know,
20 years or so,
I've seen strides, but they still have a long way to go.
And it's generally, you know, the retailers that they're just making a sale. They don't really care. The littler shops.
Yeah, the privately owned shops generally
do much better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I know, you know, in the summer when this film came out, I was getting lists from people, and they were all so many turtles back in stock, and it's cheaper if you buy them by the 10. And again, a bit like Goldfish, these things are hugely, overly mass-produced. So they cost pennies for people to get, and you can. So you know, people will get them in cheap and sell them fairly cheap, and people buy them because they're very cheap. And then it's kind of, well, what do we do now? A few weeks, a few months down the line, whether it's a Goldfish or something else, the kids have lost interest. The parents certainly don't want to have to look after this thing.
Right.
You know, and what do you do?
Yeah, I guess it kind of comes back to the whole thing, even. A lot of the same characteristics that turtles share with tank busters. People take them in not really realizing that they're not equipped to provide them with what they need, and then they have the same sort of issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the number of people I've had in that's kind of either been sold them from another place that's kind of given them really bad information. I mean, yellow-bellied sliders told, oh, yeah, they get about as big as your hand. No, these things get as big as a plate. You know, you can't just put a glass heater stat in there, because they'll be straight through that, and you know it's a big deal. You know, it's a specialist thing.
Right, and it's definitely that people are not necessarily in position to take care of them even when they take them on at first.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, quite often with any animal, and fish are much the same. You know, it's not buying a fish that costs the money. It's the tank, it's the filters, it's the running costs, it's the, you know, buying your water conditioner every couple of months, it's buying the good food, it's setting these things up and keeping them going. The animals themselves are usually the very cheapest part of it all. It's all that equipment, and it's basically what you're doing is providing not only something that goes in the house, but you're providing the whole environment and the whole life support for an animal.
Right, and that is key.
The pricing kind of makes people be in a position where they just don't feel they have to take it seriously.
Yeah, it's that whole phenomenon of the overproduction and bring the price down, and I've seen that with a lot of things. Goldfish and turtles are good examples. Hermit crabs over here, at least, are another good example. You can buy a hermit crab for a few dollars, but to set up a proper enclosure for a terrestrial hermit crab might cost a couple of hundred dollars at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess there's one thing that I would say that kind of a common thread of all of this is that
do your research.
Do your research first, and then and decide
absolutely.
If you really
do the research. Yeah, it's so easy now. You know, go to Twitter. I always say to people, even when they come to me, you know, go and ask in other shops. Go see what other shopkeepers say. Look on the internet, and we have a list of kind of a little placemat size piece of paper that we give out with, you know, good websites on, obviously like Aquarimax at the very top of the list there. But you know, for fish and for reptile stuff, here are good resources. If you really want to do this, go to these websites. Go and see what the people that are doing it, that know about it, are doing and saying, and kind of, you know, think it through and come back to me later, come back to me tomorrow. And if you really know what you're doing, I'm happy to help you do it.
Yeah, that's a perfect model for any pet shop. I think they should do the same thing that you're doing. Take an example from what you do at Fangs and Fins. And I think the pet industry in general would be a better place if everyone would just do that.
Yep.
Yeah, and then again, you know, the pet industry can often be reflected on pet, you know, kind of pet keepers as well, especially with reptiles. People always just assume it's kind of like the tattooed Hell's Angel type that has a 12-foot python around them kind of thing. And, you know, just like me and you two guys, you know, normal people have reptiles too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And the perception may be slowly changing, but it's still it's still there a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's slow, but it's progress.
Right. Bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. We'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what this is all about. Hopefully today we'll reach some people that will be able to kind of make a good start and be able to do their research,
yeah.
If
people really want to do it and they've got the facilities to do it, brilliant, do it and then share it with everybody and let us know what you're doing, let us know how successful it is. And if you do something and you do it well and you get a lot of pleasure, that's absolutely brilliant. You know, even if it's not something everybody's going to do, somebody needs to be doing that. Somebody needs to see how these animals work and everything else. And that's how we all learn a little bit of something. And, you know, sharing it with people is again, it's so easy to share this stuff these days with Facebook groups and, you know, sharing pages, shows like yours where people can kind of, you know, phone and comment in and share that across, you know, all over. And you know, joining local societies as well. If you're gonna do something that's a bit unusual and there's nothing better than, as I said before, kind of, you know, being with other people and doing that.
Right, right. And it makes it, on one end, it shows people who are interested in doing the same thing that you did, that's kind of an unusual thing, shows them, some people, oh, I can do that. I have the resources to do that. And it shows other people, oh, that's really interesting, but not necessarily for me, so I'm going to go a different way. But either way, you're helping people out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, a couple of people have said to me, oh, I want to keep piranhas. Why do you want to keep piranhas? Oh, because they're really interesting. Well, actually, they're pretty dull. They're very nervous. and get very big. And, you know, get some Colombian tetras. They're much more colourful. They're really busy. They're really active. You don't need a massive tank. They're not really messy. They're beautiful little fish. If you want something with a little bit of attitude, there's a great fish, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's true, piranhas are kind of boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might as well go in something that's a little more exciting.
I can appreciate them, but, you know.
Yeah, it's more the reputation that they're interested in, maybe sometimes.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if the tank buster thing, if there's a little bit of ego. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going to have this. I'm going to drop a cow bone in and they're going to strip it in 30 seconds.
I think sometimes it attracts the wrong kind of person that needs that kind of ego.
Exactly.
The person that can't just buy an ordinary car, they have to buy a great big truck and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't want to... I agree. There's a certain number of people who go after it for that sort of reason and rather than true interest and commitment. And we want to try to help those people realize that that's not really what they want.
A couple of guys in the fish club that I'm involved with, and, you know, they kind of specialize certainly in the bigger Central American cichlids and stuff like that, and they've got big fish rooms with big tanks, and it's something they put a lot of time and money into, and they do it really, really well, and those fish are really well looked after. The guys really enjoy it, and that's fantastic. You know, I think with this hobby, like everything else, find something that's really going to work, something that's going to, you know, you can get a challenge, that's great, but something that you're going to be successful with and is really going to make you feel good about doing it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whether it's breeding a few anglers or whether it's keeping an arowana or whatever else.
Right.
Yeah, as long as they're ready to do it and they really realize what they're getting into, then more power to them. That's the way to go.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, definitely. That's what keeps the hobby, you know, diverse and interesting and different. And, you know, if everybody just had neon tetras, it would be okay, but it'd get a bit dull. So we need variety.
Yeah.
It's very true. It's true.
Well, that is a good component of the variety in the hobby. It's true. Well, Mick, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah,
I think we're just about
to... back. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, for us too, and and we'd like to give you a chance to, if you have any other closing remarks you'd like to make, we'd like to give you a chance to do that.
Oh, okay. I think, like we said, it's kind of, you know, do your research. It's so easy to do, and it's, you know, it's something that is only going to make life much, much easier. And, you know, this hobby is, yeah, it's an information-based hobby, but it's about having fun. You know, we all have to take work far too seriously at times. This is what we do in our spare time. This is our fun and leisure time. So whichever avenue you want to go down, if it's tank busters and you can do it, great. If it's cherry shrimp and that's all you can do, that's great too. You know, so whatever you decide to do, however you do it, you know, be informed but enjoy it. Really enjoy the hobby.
I think that's excellent.
Perfect.
Advice.
Yeah,
for anyone in the hobby. So thank you very much, Mick, for joining us, and we hope to have you back again.
Yes, well, hopefully we'll try and have another Google Hangout, and all technologies will line up at some point.
Yeah.
That would be good. It's like trying to get
we'll
the
stars. Yeah,
we'll
have to try and do something while I'm in the shop, but I have been thinking about just making a short little video of the shop, which I can always kind of upload and share with you as well, so that might be some good fun.
That would be excellent, yeah.
That. And I have today started on the indoor animal room. So when my wife comes home in the next 5 minutes, I'll have to kind of just let her know that's changed, because she'll be surprised with the bookcase down the hall.
Yeah, we'd love to get a tour of that, too, once set up. Mm-hmm. Or if you'd like to share with us, during the process of how you're getting it set up, we'd love to see that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've kind of had to close the outdoor building down to bring stuff in. So I've kind of got everything in temporarily. So as we're kind of redoing some of our, we're going to have it as a mixed kind of herp and fish room. And we've got a new pygmy hedgehog coming as well, which is going to be living in there. So so once we kind of need to do a little bit of juggling around. But yeah, I want to take some pictures of the kind of, okay, here's the room, here's how we're putting things in, and here's how it's all going to work. So we'll kind of have to do some kind of shots as we develop it properly. It's all in and it's rigged up kind of good enough for now to keep everything going. So over the next few weeks, we can start getting the proper enclosures and shelving put in and then kind of get everything laid out nicely.
That'll be fun.
This time of year, trailing down the bottom of the garden, it's not a huge garden, it's not far, but if you want to work outside, you need the door open, it's windy or rain, as it invariably is here, and all that's blowing around. It's really difficult to kind of, to do that well these days. So
once
we've kind of done all the family stuff of an evening and little lass is in bed, I can kind of have half an hour or an hour tinkering around and get everything checked out, and it's all inside, it's going to be much better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If only I could do what Tony suggested and have two rooms, but no. Two rooms in a shop, I think I'd probably finish me off.
Yeah.
That would be a lot.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, you got to keep it manageable, that's true.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thanks once again, Mick, for joining us. I'm sure everyone will be excited about hearing our discussion on tank clusters.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.